The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Israel and Hamas are expected to hold a new round of ceasefire negotiations in Cairo today, at a time when Israel is under more pressure than ever before to pause the conflict. An IDF strike on an aid convoy which killed 7 aid workers, including 3 Britons, led to Foreign Secretary David Cameron telling Israel that British support was not unconditional. This week there have been calls for the UK to suspend arms exports to Israel. Deputy Prime Minister Oliver Dowden said this morning on Sky News that the UK has one of the toughest arms export systems based on legal advice. However, on the BBC, Laura Koonsberg asked Dowden about reports the government has received legal advice warning that Israel has broken international law.
Not asking you whether or not you're going to publish the legal advice. We know you're not going to publish the legal advice. That is a long-standing convention. Yeah. I'm asking you if it is true that the government's legal advice that they have received says that Israel has broken international humanitarian law.
No, we have specific concerns about different areas of Israel's conduct. We are raising those concerns with Israel. By the way, it's so important to remember this. We've gone from the horrors of 6 months ago to holding Israel to extraordinary high standards. It's right that we do so, and it's right that we raise these concerns where we say, look, what you're doing in respect of not getting aid in, or what you're doing in respect of your targeting, raises concerns for us, and we need you to engage. And by the way, Israel has engaged with those issues. We've got two crossings now opened. We want to get the aid to continue to flow through there. We are getting progress in terms of understanding what happened with that horrific attack. And for example, we've seen two officers suspended. But I think this kind of the kind of relish with which people are rushing towards this question without understanding the broader context. It's right to raise individual issues, but you have to see it in this wider context of the challenge that Israel faces.
It's interesting you say that. You've said twice, actually, that Israel is being held to extremely high standards. And you've just said you think some people are relishing sort of putting Israel on the spot over whether or not they're acting legally. Who do you think's relishing that? Don't you think people are just asking questions based on what they see as appalling suffering in Gaza? Who do you think is relishing it?
Well, I think this is an important point, which is that I think it's all too easy for the world to forget the horrors that Israel faced and rush back to attacking Israel and holding Israel to standards that we wouldn't remotely hold other countries to. Now, it's right that we hold Israel to those highest standards. No, because Israel is a democratic country. It's a rules-based country. It's a part of our broader Western family of nations. We should expect the highest standards of it. What I would say is that in response to legitimate concerns, and I'm not pulling punches about my concerns about the way in which Israel has conducted some of this conflict, they have responded to that. That's the way in which I think the United Kingdom government should use its relationship to address broader concerns, not least the humanitarian suffering that we're seeing in Gaza.
Shadow Foreign Secretary David Lammy argued that the government should publish its legal advice and that the UK must not be complicit in any breach of international law.
Issues of proportionality in terms of the rules of war are important. Issues of taking the appropriate precautions are important, and also distinguishing between combatants and civilians. And for those reasons, I do have very real concerns that our obligations in relation to international humanitarian law and the clear risk that our export and licensing regime requires government lawyers to assess and then ministers to act as a consequence might have been breached And for those reasons, I'm being very, very clear. Publish the advice. The government says they can't publish the advice. They published the advice for bombing the Hutus because of the Red Sea just a few weeks ago. They published the advice in 2011. You can publish a summary of that advice. But if you're not going to publish the advice, at least come to the House of Commons and take questions, which is what David Cameron should be doing.
Well, the House of Commons has been in recess, so that wouldn't have been the case in the last couple of weeks. But on the issue, however, and we'll come to legal advice in a second, some of your colleagues say arms sales should be stopped now. They basically believe, as did many lawyers and academics and many viewers watching the programme, they think we've seen enough. You don't need to wait for the legal advice. Why are people like Sadiq Khan and Anna Sarwar wrong?
Because they are concerned like us, like I am. They have very real doubts. The former head of MI6 has very real doubts. Four of our Supreme Court judges have very real doubts. They look at the scenes, 33,000 people dead, many of them women and children. Of course they've got concerns about proportionality. But the only person that can answer that is David Cameron, because he's the only person that's received advice. Apparently, he said he was about to receive advice at the beginning of March. It's weeks later. He was dodging questions from journalists this week. Come to the bar of the House of Commons, where we return, answer those questions, but publish a summary of advice, because this is hugely important that the United Kingdom is not complicit at all in a breach of humanitarian international law.
On Sky News, Secretary General of Médecins Sans Frontières, Christopher Lockyer, said that he had been in the Rafah area and claimed international humanitarian law was being broken on a daily basis.
Look, this is a very difficult war. First of all, it's underground. You remember, for years you told us humanitarian aid to Gaza? What have they done with all this money? They created this underground, but not underground like in London or in France. They've created underground for terrorists.
Mr. Bismuth, can I just stop you there for a second? I hadn't intended to do this, but you spoke rather directly to what Chris Lockyer said. So I want to bring back Chris Lockyer, who's still with us, to see how he responds to what you've just said. Mr. Lockyer.
Yeah, thank you, Trevor, for bringing me back on. Just wanted to be really clear that humanitarian assistance in the Gaza Strip has been wholly inadequate. We're trying to do what we can do. It's much more, as I was saying, a question than supply. But the whole area of the north of the Gaza Strip, is a siege within a siege. It's almost impossible to have humanitarian access there. Hospitals are overflowing. The Rafah area of the Gaza Strip has 1.5 million people packed in a tightly packed area. I was there myself, and we're living with the prospect of a ground invasion in Rafah, which is wholly terrifying. And just on international humanitarian law, there are now 200 aid workers that have been killed in the Gaza Strip. There was the tragic incident from the World Central Kitchen just this week, which has brought attention to this issue. But international humanitarian law has been broken on a daily basis in Gaza.
Okay. Chris Lockyer, thank you so much. Can I come back to you, Mr. Bismuth?
I would like Mr. Lockyer to stay, and I would like to ask him. Mr. Lockyer, did you try Médecins Sans Frontières to see our hostages? Are you putting pressure to see our hostages? As someone who represents medicine doctors, are you shocked by the fact that in Gaza terrorists are using hospitals for years? Are you, Mr. Lockyer, shocked by the fact that under UNRWA, for years, terrorists were having their headquarters, and you said nothing. Still, you say nothing. How much hypocrisy can we have from the world? How much hypocrisy can an organization like yours?
Mr. Bismuth,
can you answer me?
I don't think Mr. Lockyer has to answer.
It's very
that.
Clear
I just want to ask you one very quick
very
last question, if I may,
very direct,
before
very direct.
We let you
Am
go.
Am I asking a question? Are we less important?
Can I ask
than
you
people?
A question, please?
Wait a second. And are my civilians less important? I'm asking you. How come international organizations are doing nothing in order
Mr.
to
Bismuth.
See my hostages? I'm asking you.
Mr. Bismuth, I think I asked the questions here.
This week it was reported that multiple MPs have been targeted in honey trap stings on WhatsApp and dating apps. Tory MP William Ragg admitted he had given personal phone numbers of other MPs to someone he was speaking to on Grindr. On GB News, Camilla Tominey asked Oliver Dowden if Ragg should step down as vice chairman of the 1922 Committee of Conservative MPs.
Is it right that William Ragg continues as vice chairman of the 1922, having given his own colleagues personal telephone numbers to what appears to be some kind of honey trap scam artist?
The actions of William Ragg or Will Ragg were foolish and they were wrong, and he's apologised.
Shouldn't he step
for it
down?
And it's been brought out into the public domain. And no, I don't think he should step down. I think he made a stupid
error. But he's betrayed backbenchers, hasn't he? He's betrayed backbenchers, and yet he claims to represent them as vice chairman of the 1922 committee. Doesn't make any sense to keep him in that role, does it?
As you and many of your viewers will know, the purpose of the 1922 committee is a committee of backbenchers, part of whose job really is to hold ministers to account. So I don't think it's going to be helpful for a minister to start telling the 22 committee how it should conduct its internal affairs. I've noted the fact that Will has accepted what he said was foolish, and he's apologised for it.
Is it foolish in general for MPs to be on dating apps, Mr Dowden?
Well, it's actually quite an interesting question, Camilla. I'm happily married, so this isn't an issue that arises for me. But MPs are also entitled to have a private life and to conduct their private life. You shouldn't be forced to give up your private life in its entirety. I do think, though, it's incumbent on anyone who holds public office, whether nationally or locally, to hold themselves to a very high standard and think about the way in which they conduct themselves on those kind of sites. And Will Ragg clearly fell short of that in his conduct recently.
Questions have grown about Angela Rayner's tax affairs after the Mail on Sunday claimed Rayner's social media posts were evidence that she had lied about where she lived. Speaking to Trevor Phillips on Sky News, David Lammy said Rayner had Labour's full support.
Lammy, the Mail on Sunday this morning says that it has evidence that Angela Rayner lied about her tax arrangements. What are you saying about it today?
I think the Mail on Sunday has evidence that Angela Rayner, like so many families across the country, had and has a blended family. You meet someone, they have children, a previous arrangement. Many families up and down the country live in more than one home. That's what the photos I saw reflects, and it's consistent with the advice that Angela took in terms of her tax affairs from accountants, from lawyers. I don't think this is a story. I think
Hang on. It is a story, because what you're saying says that the place that she said was not her home was where she actually lived. And nobody's arguing that it isn't complicated and maybe some people make mistakes. Why didn't she just say, I may have made a mistake here? The law says what you're supposed to do. You can only have one home. And maybe she made a mistake. Why not just say that?
I think she's been clear all along.
No, she says she's done nothing wrong.
Yeah, so she's been clear she's done nothing wrong. She has our full support in that. Her arrangements, and certainly her tax arrangements, were subject to advice from accountants and from lawyers. She played by the rules, but yes, like everybody else, she had a complicated life and lived in, you know, spent time in her husband's place, but also her place. Lots of families do that. What's the story?
Lastly, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg told Koenigsberg that we were in a new era of global conflict and instability.
You're also sounding the alarm about the connections between different conflicts. You name-checked Iran helping Russia, China, North Korea. Do you think we're in a new era of instability?
Yes, and the challenge is that NATO remains a regional alliance. North America and Europe will remain that. But the threats and the challenges we face, they are global. Security is not regional, security is global. And the war in Ukraine demonstrates that very clearly. Russia is receiving support from its friends and partners in Asia. China is propping up the Russian war economy, delivering key parts of the defense industry. And in return, Moscow is mortgaging its future to Beijing. Iran delivers drones and other military equipment to Russia. In return, Russia is delivering technology to the Iranian missile and nuclear programs. The same with North Korea. enormous amounts, hundreds of thousands of rounds of ammunition from North Korea to Russia, straight into the conflict in or the war against Ukraine. In return, Russia is delivering technology to North Korea. So this is very much the same. What happens in Asia matters for Europe, and what happens in Europe matters for Asia. And that makes it even more important that like-minded countries, NATO allies, but also our partners in the Asia-Pacific, that we also work more closely together. And that's exactly what we do to stand up against this stronger alliance of authoritarian powers.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Joe Bidell-Brill. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes Store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/blend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.